You're listening to a podcast from the Media Motel. Coming up this week in episode 270. In the light of the Anjem Chowdhury case, does free speech mean you can say absolutely anything? We look back at week two of the Olympics. Woohoo! And how do you find new music? We check out Spotify's new release Radar. That's all coming out up after Samurai 7. I wish I had the wherewithal to attract your attention. I wish I had the wherewithal to attract your attention. You were so nonpareil. You introduced a new elation in my life. You were so nonchalant. I don't suppose this new sensation will materialize. Wish I had the wherewithal to attract your attention. Wish I had the wherewithal to attract your attention.
Oxford's Samurai 7 and their distinctly chirpy version of Cliverty Ward's Wherewithal. Welcome to the Parish Council podcast. It's episode 270, brought to you by the Media Motel. I'm Terence Dackham, and here's our Samurai... No, that's not going to work. No, no, no. It's Juliet Harris.
Hello. I would very much like to be some sort of samurai ninja person. In fact, if I could be in a world where I could have ninja as my occupation on my passport, I would very much appreciate that.
Yeah, I always try and sort of effect some awful pun based around, you know, for your introduction based around the first track. And I just thought, I can't say here's our, you know, samurai person.
Well, I do have the wherewithal to do the podcast.
I should have focused on that.
Never mind. Either you can edit this, or, you know, we'll just chalk it down to experience.
I'll chalk it down to experience. Jules, earlier this week, a man many media outlets label as a radical preacher or a hate preacher was convicted of inviting support for a proscribed organisation. Now, many will not shed any tears at the likely lengthy jail sentence that will follow, but it does lead to a significant question about when freedom of speech in the UK doesn't actually mean freedom of speech. Speaking of this specific case, as neither of us were in court, but I know these laws are quite complicated, particularly, I believe, since we incorporated the European Convention into our laws. Now, despite my revulsion towards the views held by the radical preacher and his pals, should we be afraid of words, or do we need exceptions to freedom of speech to prevent the promotion of terrorism and other actions that harm us as individuals or as a society, Jules?
Well, this isn't a sort of an age-old balance, really. And just to give a bit of background where I'm coming from on this, as regular listeners know, I am a lawyer and I studied law at university. And at that time, I was quite interested in going into human rights law and that sort of thing, and a sort of a lack of opportunities and cuts to legal aid and whatever stopped me from doing so. But so I was sort of studying around sort of 2002, 2005. And when I was at university, there was this big case that went to the House of Lords that was to do with anti-terror legislation and detention without charge, and it was you know, I was very interested in that sort of thing. So to start with the sort of the point of why this chap's been banned for inviting support for a proscribed organisation. The proscribed organisations, there's a government list that lists what it describes on the government's website as lists the extremist groups or organisations banned under UK law and provides the criteria considered when deciding whether or not to proscribe a terrorist organisation. And so under the Terrorism Act in 2000, which is a new Labour piece of legislation, the Home Secretary may prescribe an organisation if she, isn't that interesting, because at the time I think it would have been possibly Jackie Smith, I think.
No.
And actually now, so it says she in that, are they now adapting it for Amber Rudd? I don't know, anyway. But under the Terrorism Act, you can prescribe an organisation if you think it's concerned in terrorism and it's proportionate to do so. And that means that the organisation commits or participates in acts of terrorism, prepares for terrorism, promotes or encourages terrorism, including the unlawful glorification of terrorism, or is otherwise concerned in terrorism.
Did you say who makes this decision? Who decides?
Home Secretary.
Oh, I see. Okay, thank you.
It says that terrorism, for the act's purpose, means the use or threat which involves serious violence against a person, involves serious damage to property, endangers a person's life, other than the person committing the act, so suicide bombers, I presume, creates a serious risk to the health or safety of the public or section of the public, or is designed seriously to interfere with or seriously to disrupt an electronic system. There are various prescription
so
offences.
So one person decides...
The Home Secretary decides. Yes, but it is the Home Secretary.
Nonetheless, one person decides whether I, sitting here in Berkshire, can or cannot make my own decisions on whether someone's words are valid or not. They decide
what this is actually describing is.
Whether an organisation is prescribed.
Whether the purposes of an organisation. That was brought in 2000. It might have been slightly modified since, but that's where we are in terms of when we're talking about to support that's why he's supporting organisations. And when you look through the list, I mean, once upon a time, I don't know if the IRA is still on there actually, but there are, I mean, most of these are, I mean, ISIL is on there, obviously, the Islamic Jihadi Union, the Hezbollah military wing. I don't think the IRA is on there anymore, actually. Okay. Egyptian. Most of these organisations relate to the Middle East and things purporting to be Islamic, if you see what I mean. Thinking about human rights, generally are a balance. And when I studied human rights, the three articles which are enshrined in our own Human Rights Act still at present are the three articles that caused us the most kind of debate and the most kind of thought, particularly in the way they interact with each other. It's Article 8, which is the Article 8 provides a right to respect for one's private and family life, his home and his correspondence, subject to certain restrictions that are in accordance with law and necessary in a democratic society. Article 9 provides the freedom to thought, conscience and religion. This includes the freedom to change a religion or belief and to manifest a religion and belief in worship, teaching, practice and observance, subject to certain restrictions that are in accordance with law necessary in a democratic society. And then the same restrictions apply to Article 10, which is freedom of expression, which is the right to hold, the right and freedom to hold opinions and to receive and impart information and ideas, but it allows restrictions for interests of national security, territorial integrity or public safety, prevention of disorder or crime, prevention of health or morals, protection of reputation or the rights of others. And that's the crucial thing here, I think. So the problem, so what we're saying is that everybody has human rights, but also everybody, we always used to say as a university, everybody also has human responsibilities. And the problem is how do you balance one person's, you know, one person's expression of their rights against another person's expression of their rights? And that is always a very fine and finite balance, I think. So thinking about, for example, you know, I have every right to, I have every right to have a private life, and part of my private life involves me being gay and you know, and engaging in gay relationships. I have a friend who is very strongly religious and you know, and is religious to the point where they do not believe that homosexual relationships are correct. And of course, you know, we have to find a way in life of balancing the two of us together. Of course, my friend is perfectly entitled to hold those views, and we get on despite them. I'm perfectly entitled to have my private life.
Do you need the Home Secretary to give you guidance between the two of you?
Well, I think we might have swapped bodies briefly this week, because I do actually think that I don't think we need the Home Secretary, but I actually think I'm happy for the courts to decide this, because actually I think that when you're dealing with such big issues and human rights, there are very few bigger issues in human rights. I may upset the Red Corduroy Trouser Brigade on this, but you know, there are, you know, that as far as I'm concerned, you know, us all learning to live with each other as humans, you know, I think this is what the Declaration for me is talking about, really, and how do we all live together without you know, without causing each other harm or upsetting each other. Those big decisions sometimes need adjudicating, which is why, like all things, why we have laws in this country and why we do have a legal process, because sometimes we need an adjudicator. And actually, yes, I know that the Home Secretary is an elected MP. She or indeed he are not elected into that role, but they are put into that role by a government that we elect. I mean, we've talked about this before on the podcast, just because I didn't vote for the Conservatives doesn't therefore mean that, you know, they shouldn't be the government because I didn't vote for them. A fact which is somewhat lost on some of my comrades at the moment, but you see what I mean. So my view is that there needs to be an adjudicator. If you are, I mean, so your adjudicators are Home Secretary, so the elected government, the Home Secretary on behalf of the elected government, or the British courts, the judiciary, which are unelected, but they do that role. Or the alternative is, if you, you know, exhaust the judiciary over here, to go to the European Court of Human Rights in Strasbourg, which we still can at the moment. I don't know how that will be affected once you've left Europe. But my view on this is, yes, it is a very finite balance. Most of the time, yes, surely people exercise their common sense. But on the occasions where there needs to be an adjudicator, sometimes it does need to be an adjudicator, I think. And actually, the advantage of having the courts do this is that if someone has been particularly oversensitive and, you know, said, oh, you know, someone, you know, my friend saying that they don't believe in homosexual relationships has, you know, upset me forever and undermined mine, I'm taking you to court. Most sensible judges would throw the case out. So actually there is a check and a balance there, I think. But I do think that, you know, I think human rights are desperately important. You know, I think they're completely fundamental. But I do think occasionally we might need guidance as a collective in order to explore how they are expressed.
Yeah, I just bring it back to a very basic level. If I said to everybody listening to this now, come and join me this afternoon, tie an enormous lead weight to your torso and jump into the Thames, most people would say, no, you're all right, mate, you know, I'm not going to be doing that.
You need better leisure activities.
Similarly, if I hear this hate preacher, this radical preacher say to me, look, you know, all these non-believers in my faith are awful people, and I think, you know, we should do terrible things to them, I just think most people would think, no, you're okay, mate, I'll just go and watch, you know, a bit more of the Olympics.
Yeah, problem is, though, and I agree with you, But I think it's very telling that you've used the expression most people there rather than all people. And my concern is, and I can see where, you know, this is probably where the government are coming from, is that, you know, the flip side to this is that you go, okay, then we won't impose on this. You know, we won't, Terence, everyone can go and jump in the river with you. That's fine. But there are, you know, there are people in society who are very vulnerable. And by this, I mean, there are people in society who perhaps for reasons of mental health or other reasons are, you know, find themselves in a place where they're easily influenced or they're suggestible, and they fall in with these kind of crowds. I mean, but I haven't sort of researched this point specifically, but I'm sure there have been instances when there have been public terror attacks where, you know, people have kind of found themselves being radicalized. And I want to be sure that this is a completely separate point for people holding a religion of Islam. You know, you will find no Islamophobia from me ever. But, and actually, I think that the people that do these things do not do it in the name of Islam. They use that as a pretext on which to spread their hateful behavior. But yes, most people would not do this. But the problem is that the human cost is so high when someone is, I think, persuaded into doing these sort of things and does blow themselves up on the tube in a July the 7th type bombings. I can see why. If you are the Home Secretary, and I suspect that the Home Secretary is privy and party to a hell of a lot more. I mean, they have more of an idea of the serious risks that face our society than we do, I suspect. And by serious risks, I mean the specific terrorist threats that come in, because I think there's a hell of a lot that happens that MI5 and MI6 deal with that we never ever see. And that's how it should be. And I suspect that if I was Home Secretary, I would probably tend towards the more liberal. But if I knew that, you know, that we had this organisation preaching potentially to vulnerable people in society, and you know, there was a risk, I would not want to be the Home Secretary that did not shut that down, and then 80 people are blown up in King's Cross or wherever, and then of course people turn around and say, well, why didn't you do anything? Yeah. So it's an extremely difficult balance to strike. But equally, it's the old expression, national security is always the thing that seems to trump, you know, not our friend in America, but Trump in the verbal sense. National security is always the thing and the public interest is always the thing that trumps freedom of expression, freedom of religion, and right to a private life. It's always that, you know, the state is only really meant to intervene, I think, if there is a sufficient threat to national security. So I think that, yes, it is. I don't want to live in a world where nobody can ever say anything. But equally, I think that where you have got people, you know, hate preachers, for want of a better word, where you have got people threatening large amounts of harm, I have less of a problem with there being interventions there than I do in any other aspects of human rights law, I think, as long as national governments don't then abuse that and don't treat everything as an issue as national security and use it as a way of surreptitiously cracking down on our rights and freedoms.
Do you know, there's an aspect to this that many people say, well, that's not the most important thing, but there's one bit of this whole thing that I find so aggravating about this particular hate preacher, and it's him and his family have lived on benefits for about 20 years, from time to time, we hear of people forced onto particular programmes that are sometimes shown to be inappropriate for their condition and so on. And I'd love to hear from a senior person at the Department of Work and Pensions about this radical preacher. I looked up the current rules to claiming job seekers allowance and employment and support allowance for people in the work-related group. And after 3 months, you're supposed to join the work programme, which supports the long-term unemployed into work. This man hasn't worked and has been on benefits. He tells us this himself for 20 years. There's a whole range of, public sector, private sector, third sector organisations who carry out this work programme. I would love to know whether controversial people like our radical preacher are pursued onto this work programme, or are they left alone because the job centre people think, oh, no, don't want to, you know, it's him, the hate preacher, no, we'll make an exception for him.
I don't know the circumstances of this case, so I don't really think I can sensibly comment.
No, I know.
Pushes hand in your face as I get into a waiting car surrounded by photographers.
Absolutely. I know it's not the most important aspect for some reason. You know, it riles me that if he or others are given a kind of preferential treatment by the benefits people, then I just...
This is working on the basis that the reporting about this case is correct.
Yes, indeed. I must stress, though, he himself in speeches and so on has mocked the benefit system because he said the state has paid me for 20 years fight against it.
But so that's working clearly on the basis that what he's saying is correct as well, indeed. And not deliberately inflammatory to wind people up, but still.
True. I didn't know of this next track until Juliet picked it, and then I haven't stopped playing it this week since I heard it. I really love it. It's Tahiti 80 and Heartbeat.
It's not much for you. Won't you forgive me? That's all I can do. Can you feel my heart beat when I'm close to you? Oh, 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 oh. Can you feel my heart beat when I'm close to you?
Favorite summer tunes, I think. It always makes me think of sitting places outside in the sun. I do have a bit of a thing for kind of French soft rock as well, actually. I really like Phoenix too, and there are a number of bands of that kind of ilk that are great. This is Tahiti 80, and that was Heartbeat, and I believe it came from their album Wallpaper for the Soul, I think, which...
lovely name.
No, it didn't come from the one before. Wallpaper for the Soul, which is excellent, came out in 2002, and that's off Puzzle, which came out in 1999. I think they are still reasonably big in France, so hooray for them.
Do you know what, Jules? As so often, I spoke too soon in describing the Olympics last week as a bit meh.
I wondered if you might have bias or non-bias remorse.
I haven't got remorse, because as soon as I said that, the whole thing took off. And the second week has been a cavalcade of fantastic sporting achievements and stories. I'd just like to go off on a tangent, just very quickly, contrast this with a nasty, mean-spirited circumstance that surrounded me at Stamford Bridge on Monday, when I went to support Chelsea and watched them squeeze past a kind of strangely lethargic West Ham.
Yeah.
When Eden Hazard put Chelsea ahead early in the second half, instead of celebrating in a positive way, hundreds, I think probably thousands, I can safely say, of Chelsea supporters decided that the thing to do would be to taunt the West Ham fans, who understandably gone a bit quiet after Chelsea scored.
Yeah, funny that, yeah.
This was the chant that echoed around Stamford Bridge from the Chelsea supporters. No noise, or to the tune of Go West by the Pet Shop Boys. No noise from the Pikey Boys. No noise from the Pikey Boys. We all know I'm maybe perhaps a little bit oversensitive about things in life, but this made me squirm, Jules. Isn't this a little bit close to the N-word or that P-word that some people from Asian heritage sometimes have thrown at them? Calling West Ham fans pikies, it seemed to cause great lols to fans all around me, but I found it really disturbing.
Well, of course they are freedom of expression in it.
I tie it in with our earlier discussion.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, it's not great, is it, really?
I mean,
I think a lot of people... It's interesting, because I associate the expression pikey. I think the reason why we're perhaps both uncomfortable is it's often associated with the gypsy and travelling fraternity and using a derisory fashion to describe them. I wonder, and I'm not defending people for using this word, it's horrible, but I wonder how many younger people know the context behind it and just think that it's an insult, like, I don't know, idiot or stronger expressions of that term, idiot, I don't know. But I do find it tricky, although interestingly I used to find it very irritating and used to tell people off online, because I was that person. I'm not anymore, but I was that person for using the expression yids to describe Tottenham fans. Because of course you're being a derisory slang for someone Jewish, and Tottenham Hotspur have, you know, big links to the Jewish community. Having said this, someone did actually say to me, a supporter of another club said to me, oh, but the Tottenham fans use it themselves, and they refer to themselves as the Yid Army. And that made me think, I wonder, even if that chap was being correct, I wonder if that, you know, I wonder, maybe reclaiming a phrase for yourself as fans.
I think that's why they did it, Jules. Sorry to interrupt, but I think Tottenham were caught in a kind of maelstrom about this a couple of years ago, about saying, well, the official sort of side of Tottenham, do we endorse our fans re-owning this word, or do we still have the revulsion? And I think you can tie it in with the N-word being adopted by some people to re-own it, you know, sort of rappers and some American artists, who use it, you know, now as a word to kind of re-own it, and so it doesn't become a word of hate anymore. But
yes, but that is
still
it
still makes me squirm.
Yes, and that is and I suppose that is a different thing to it still being used as an insult against someone else. So yes, football matches are rough and tumble. I do appreciate that, but when it tips into that kind of, you know, racially sensitive and I am going to use the expression race in this, actually, because I think the gypsies and travellers are now defined as a race. I think there was quite a lot of legislation around this during the New Labour era. So yes, there is. Yes, it's one thing, you know, getting involved in the banter of football chants, which is always good fun, actually. But it's another thing that, you know, anything that is racially sensitive is a bit disturbing, I think.
On the other hand, what a joy the second week of the Olympics.
Yes.
And, of course, Claire Balding has been deft and consummate as the lead presenter.
Yes, absolutely. And in the trolley, which has been nicknamed the Rio Speedwagon.
Excellent. I like that.
Good, isn't it? There was a picture of the trolley yesterday at the end of Claire Balding's last shift on Twitter that she put. So, it's so much. I mean, my highlight of the second week of the Olympics had to be Jason Kenny's bag for life.
Oh, yes, when he went off for his medal ceremony.
Name. Yes, indeed. Well, no, yes, at the medal ceremony, he packed his kit away in what appeared to be a Sainsbury's bag for life. Yes. Other supermarket bags for life are available. Yes.
But I tell you what about the cycling coverage. I mean, I think the cycling coverage was glorious. Claire Balding, Chris Hoy. Chris Hoy was excellent.
Yes.
And then Simon Brotherton and Chris Boardman commentating.
And Joe Rousel, who was one of the girls that won the team, whatever it was. She did some commentary as well. Joe Rousel Shand, I think. Her name.
That's
she was
right,
good as well.
Yeah. She was just about faultless, at least until the moment when gold-winning cyclist Laura Trott and Jason Kenny embraced after Kenny's victory. And Boardman said, she's doing the emotion for both of them, really. He's looking at her going, what's for tea?
I know, my toes curled at that. Although,
why do male commentators of a certain age blurt out these things?
Well, having said that, Chris Boardman's wife, Claire Boardman, then went on to Twitter to explain and to defend her husband, who she said was a feminist, and she said, and I could actually see her point in this, she said, his description was, you know, what's for tea was just a kind of a general question, like what's on TV. If he'd said what's on TV, we wouldn't be having that conversation, would we? So I don't know. I mean, I do worry that saying, oh, he's a feminist, and, you know, he's not. Sometimes it's very deep, isn't it? Sometimes people that think that they are very liberal and groovy still have these deep ingrained prejudices in them. I don't know. Yes, I thought that was a bit of a bum note, really. That did jar a bit. That I noticed it when watching the coverage on TV. But no, there have been, I mean, even overnight, there have been more medals. You know, Nicola Adams has won, re-won her boxing gold. Mo Farah's won another gold. I mean, it's you know, the idea that, you know, the medal target for Britain at this Olympics was 48, based on the idea that we won 65? I can't remember how many we won in London now. I think we won 65 in London, and I think we've overtaken
to 66 now. I think that's quite right. Of course, adding
amazing
to the
achievement, you know, in that we've beaten our best, you know, our best ever games, and also it's our best ever away games. No country had ever bettered itself the Olympics after it had hosted. I mean, how incredible.
And swimming caps off to Ryan Lochte, who's added to the gaiety of nations this week with his shenanigans.
And the annoying thing is that he's, you know, described someone as, oh, you know, the kid's acting up. The man is 32 years old. I mean, really. And it turns out, of course, my dad correctly predicted this, being the hard-bitten cynic that he is. So the story was that Ryan Lochte and three other swimmers claimed they'd been burgled in a gas station somewhere in Rio.
Mugged, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it turned out that they went to the gas station. They were all in a high spirit, shall we say. Someone tried to get through a door or something and smashed it, and you know, the situation deteriorated from there. Eventually, they agreed with the gas station. I suspect some money changed hands, and they agreed that, you know, that was all right, and you know, that was the story. We later find out that the reason why that they perhaps might not be full and frank in telling the truth was that there were two women that were with them in a car that they did not get out of the car, in another car at the gas station, and these you know, the people that were with the women had wives and girlfriends of their own at home. They were, unfortunately, and so as a result of which, this kind of John Cleese in Clockwise-esque kind of cover up exploded to try and stop this. So yeah, thank you the Americans for being for being dumber than us and making us look reasonably well behaved. That's always good, isn't it? No, it's been a you know, a fantastic festival of sound like Alan Partridge, a festival of sport, but it really has. I mean, there's been so much on. There's just been stuff on all the time, and actually, although there's been the usual jokes about how good we are in Britain at the sitting down sports, having said that, we've got a range of medals across so many sports, and you know, obviously not everyone has succeeded as we thought they would, but there was a you know, the human stories you get kind of bound up in as well. So the women's triathlon yesterday, a sport which I have little to no interest in, I found myself watching it gripped in the afternoon while sorting out records to go out in the evening, because there were two British ladies that ended up competing for the bronze, and they were best friends that lived together, that are housemates, and one got the bronze and the other one, you know, came fourth, and it was very, everyone felt very, very sorry for one that came fourth, and they interviewed them together, and they said to the one that won the bronze, what was the first thing you said to the other one, and she said, sorry, I'm sorry.
Yes, but now of course we'll all forget the Brownlee boys and all these other people for 4 years until Tokyo in 2020, when we suddenly become huge fans of all these people we didn't know of before.
Yeah, absolutely, yes.
How do you separate the wheat from the chaff, the sheep from the goats, the Eric de Jemba Jemba from the Paul Pogba?
like that.
With an absolutely enormous amount of new music released each week, how can we sift through to find tracks that may strike a chord with us? That's next, after this new track from Wilco.
I've never been alone long enough to know if I ever was a child. I've was tied up like a boat, putting like a coat, set free for a while. While I jump to jolt my clumsy blood, while my white green eyes cry like a window pane, can my cold heart change?
From their new album, the splendidly titled, the album splendidly titled Wilco Schmilco. That's Wilco,
like that.
Yeah, and If I Ever Was a Child. A generation ago, musicians generally needed an advance from a record company to make music and release it on vinyl, cassette, CD.
Mm-hmm.
With the digital revolution, it's now possible to create and release music on a very, very limited budget indeed.
Absolutely.
As a result, more music is being released than ever before, and I'm finding it just about impossible to keep up. Is Spotify coming to our rescue? After the success of their Discover Weekly project, now comes Spotify's latest adventure, Release Radar. Each Friday, Spotify will load you a playlist containing new music only, based on artists you've listened to most frequently, and those they're kind of groovy algorithms that they think you might appreciate, these artists.
Yeah.
That Wilco track popped up in my release radar this week. Jules, you have to find music every week for your Indie Wonderland radio show.
Okay.
How do you discover new music, and will Release Radar help you in your quest?
Spotify and yes, in short, is the answer to that. Yes, I find myself, doing a lot of digging through Spotify. I find Spotify to be the discovery thing we've spoken about before every week. I think is really good. I really like that a lot. I haven't tried this Release Radar yet. I read about it, but I haven't tried it yet. And I'm really, really, really looking forward to trying it, because I think it's going to be really good. I discover new music. I used to use the NME radar, and I don't very much now. That's kind of fallen off my radar. I find that the website's gone the same way as the magazine. I find it increasingly difficult to kind of to kind of navigate or to build up any interest in, really. So Six Music I find to be quite a good source of things as well. And it's sort of following individual bands on Twitter, I guess. But no, I'm like you, I'm a big fan of Spotify, and I think that it's interesting to see how these algorithms work, really. And the idea that you've got, I suppose, I say it feels like you have a computer. I suppose you do have a person at the bottom of it all, kind of still curating for you, but there's more of a kind of an electronic intervention in that, isn't there?
I believe it's all by algorithms. I believe there is no human interest in it at all, because everybody gets
us.
Someone creates the software for the program, yes, but we all get individual different lists based upon our previous listening choices, and then what happens is they look at everybody else who's let's say it's me, and I've been listening to, say, Crosby, Stills and Nash, Joni Mitchell, Todd Rundgren. It'll look at everybody else in the last few weeks who's been listening to those artists and what they've been listening to as new work, and then from that they'll edge that into my release radar. It's not as easy to find as Discovery Weekly, because they may change this, because Discover Weekly is just like on your left hand bar and it's just there and you can click on it. You've to find Release Radar, which is personal to you, you go to browse and then go to new releases, and then you see Release Radar there.
Oh, right. It's different for everybody now. It's just pity that it's not easy.
I'd put it right on the front page.
They might change that, I suspect. So is this the new, to the new Music Friday thing? I think I can see it. I'll release the conversation off air.
I think we all maybe reach a stage in life where it becomes hard to accept new things generally. It just seems just so exhausting having to deal with new all the time. So I've restricted myself in terms of finding new music to only two sources before this. One is your Indie Wonderland show on a Wednesday.
Thank you very much.
I've got a little playlist of stuff that I either wait to hear what you announce it, or I Shazam it and then put it into a playlist when I hear something I like. And Bob Harris's Sunday show on Radio 2, which is kind of my generation, really. It's broadcast at the most absurd times, in the middle of the night, so I listen to that on catch-up during the week. But for decades, Bob Harris has been my sort of go-to show. It's generally, if he likes it, I'll like it. But I'm going to give Spotify's Release Radar a chance and see if it maybe adds a new dimension to the discovery of my sort of new music.
Well, I've just got mine up, and the interesting thing is that it seems to include releases, re-releases and reissues.
Yes, it does. I found that disappointing. So, you're right.
Yeah, so looking at this, don't get me wrong, I really like Baby Washington. It's something that I play a lot on my Saturday Social Northern Soul show, and I noticed there must be a new Best Of out.
That's it. I got several new
Bowie live album stuff that's coming out. There's something from that on it. There's also something by my much loved Cooler Shaker, so that is good news. I'll be interested to try this out, actually, although it doesn't look very long by the look of it.
There's about 20 tracks on mine from memory.
Yeah, it looks about that. I'm sure I get more of those on my Discover Weekly. I think Discover Weekly might be more than that, so it would be nice to see it a bit. But it's quite...
But this, of course, is only new releases, so perhaps it's only, there aren't enough new releases that would fit into your set of interests.
And they say the more that you listen, the more that gets. Also, as well as your Release Radar, it also has, looking at this, you can scroll along, it also has things called new releases for you. So as well as that, it will take you, for example, it's giving me a record by Dinosaur Jr., a record by the Hackney Colliery Band, a record by reissue by Jilted John, a White Denim album. So it is actually, it directs you, as well as directing you to individual songs, it will direct you to albums as well, which is quite interesting. So, and there are various kind of recommended for you lists as well. I will certainly be trying it out. And actually, I've got on very well with the Spotify Discover playlist. I've discovered lots of things that are new to me. But actually, for doing the Indie Wonderland show, I always I don't find it a struggle to find new music, but I'm always trying to get the balance right between playing new things and playing things that people already know and really like, because I don't like to bombard people with loads of new music. I want to try and find a sort of a balance, really. I want it to be a mix of old and new. So actually, this will keep the new end up nicely, I should think.
And speaking of your radio appearances, you've been doing lots of public appearances over the weekend. But
yes, I have.
What have you got coming up?
This Wednesday I've got Indie Wonderland, and that's going up, but I'm also DJing somewhere else at the same time. So yes, I'll be splitting the atom. I'm DJing down in Hastings at the Royal Standard. There's a chap, a friend of ours called Jolin, that's coming over from Spain, I think, that sort of plays in lots of surf bands. So there will be multiple DJs playing at the Standard, including me and my Sheila's partner Letty. And then next Saturday is the return of the Saturday Social, the N show. So yeah, that's it and all about it this week.
You can contact us if you like. Twitter's the easiest way, at SuperJules84 for Juliet.
Indeed, yeah, still.
At Sir Terence for me. Thanks as deep as Loch Lomond to Rona, of course. And
oh, absolutely, yes. Continuing to send countryside love.
And thanks to you for listening. A Lucinda Williams cover to play us out, Jules.
Yes, indeed. And I really like this. It's only fairly recently I discovered it was a cover. I thought it was an original. But I love this version particularly. Lucinda Williams is one of those people, by the way, and I know I might be committing heresy in some parts. I do really like her, but I can never quite get on with lots of her music at once. And I suspect that is me rather than her. So I find, and apologies to Lucinda Williams, I find covers of her songs much easier to get on with, and actually that would explain why I like this so much. This is Hooray for the Riff Raff, which is an excellent name, and something I discovered on Six Music, actually, and this is called People Talking.
Well, people, they're trying to tear us apart, they're trying to rip out my heart. Those people talking, people talking. It's full of misery and pain, but if somebody calls you a dirty name, keep on walking, keep on walking. I love you more than this cruel world will ever know. I wanna be your girl forever, I don't wanna let you go. Well, if I could change things, I would die just to return another name, man. Knowing everything I've learned, I'd keep on walking, keep on walking. Now all my life
have been listening to a DACA Media production.